Archie's here. Betty's here. Veronica too. Reggie's here. Hey Jughead, where are you? We wanna dance and we wanna sing. Have some fun and adventuring. All the friends are here, but it ain't complete. We ain't the Archies without the Jughead beat. Whoa, Archie's here. Betty's here, Veronica too, Reggie's here. And here comes Jughead and Hot Dog too, so everything's Archie. Come on, let's go with the Archie Show.
Hello and welcome to Comics in the Golden Age. This is Mike Lane, and I have a very, very special guest with us tonight. It is longtime friend of the show, one of our early supporters, Mr. Joe Crawford, Iowa's Joe. Welcome, Joe.
Thanks for having me, Mike. Glad to be here.
I am thrilled to have you. I should note, you know, a lot of our listeners are on Twitter, very active on Twitter. I get a lot of messages there. If you are on Twitter, I believe your handle, your new one, you were off for a while, but you're back. Your new one is at GAJoe74. Is that correct?
Right. I was trying to be clever and do a way to get in Georgia as well, since that's my original roots. But unfortunately, the original GA Joe is taken, so we threw the 74 on there to make sure that I had that used anyway.
Well, if you're listening, check out Joe's Twitter account. It's a great one if you're a comic fan. He is always posting there, and I love to follow him, so please give him a follow if you don't already. Joe and I today are going to be talking Archie Comics. Now, if you've listened to our show for a while, you know that about, oh gosh, has it been 2 years now? I think you did a mini episode for us.
I think it was right around 2 years, yep.
Yeah, and Joe covered some Archie. He's a fan, and we really appreciated it, loved it. I have been meaning to have him back for a very, very long time, and you know, our listeners know last year, we spent, you know, a good portion of the year on hiatus, so plans got delayed. But I am thrilled to have him back, and again, we are going to be talking Archie today. Now, before I get into the specifics of what we're actually going to be talking about as far as the comics, I wanted to talk to Joe a little bit about his comics history. Now, when he was on the mini episode before, he did talk a little bit about his comics origin story. But I was hoping, Joe, you would share with us again your comics history, how you got into them initially.
Sure. Growing up, we didn't really have comics around the house per se. The main exposure I would have had to comics was through the library. We had the Fireside Marvel books, the Superman from the 30s to the 70s, and the Whitman library-bound comics. So the bulk of the comic reading would have been done through the public library. But around 1980, my dad bought me my first couple of comics. It was a Cap and a Doctor Strange. And that got me, you know, a little bit started. But my big breakthrough was probably G.I. Joe, which got me to start collecting a comic. But what got me into comic universes was Who's Who number 4. We picked that up one day, and that really opened my eyes to the variety of characters out there. And you know, if you've ever listened to Rob and Shag's show, Who's Who, you know that, like, that happened, I think, with a lot of kids from our generation. We read about Captain Comet, and we think, okay, this is a major character. And that just got me so intrigued by all the different characters and variety of stories that were told in comics.
We have something in common, having G.I. Joe as a big part of our comics history, because that was the first comic book I ever actually picked up. I was kind of a latecomer to comics. I started when I was just about to turn 10, and G.I. Joe 26 was my first issue. Do you happen to recall, like, did you get in from the ground floor at issue 1, or did you come in later?
No, I was around, I want to say issue 13. It was when Snake Eyes was teaming up with Quinn in South America. So you've got the Dr. Venom storyline that was kind of really kicking off there. And it was a good place to jump on because Quinn, you know, that was my favorite character. And of course, you know, it turns out he didn't have a toy. He wasn't on the show. But through the comics, I thought he was one of the most important characters in G.I. Joe.
Oh, I agree. When I went back, because I think I've said in the show before, when I get into something, I dive into it obsessively and go. So I started picking up back issues pretty quickly. And I remember reading that story with Quinn and just loving it. It was one of my favorites.
Oh, yeah. Him and Dr. Venom and Snake Eyes were like my favorite trio. And, you know, talk about an odd, well, not an odd couple, but an odd trio. They were great. Those were good comics.
Now, Archie, when did you or how did you get into Archie comics?
Okay, so Archie was kind of always around, but I don't know that it was ever really my thing. We had Digest as a kid growing up. I still have some of the early ones I picked up. I really liked Little Archie, which, you know, you're in second or third grade. That's, you know, it's a little kid version of Archie. You probably relate to that a little bit better than the guy working on his hot rod and trying to get dates. But where I really got interested again was when I became a parent. I was trying to find appropriate things for my child to read. And other than back issues, one of the few things that was on the newsstand and I could subscribe through my comic store was Archie Comics. So I decided to research it. And when I started researching Archie Comics, I had decided apparently I would really, really enjoy them. So I remember going down to one of the used bookstores and grabbing some Digest and going through them. And I just slowly built and built and built that collection. And the other thing I would say outside of just being exposed, trying to learn more about it, was the Riverdale podcast, which is sadly no longer with us, but it was such a great show. And guy Jonathan did a wonderful show. So if you ever want to look up old episodes, it was a great show, Riverdale podcast. And that also got me into Archie because he kind of guided you. He would say, what were some good old stories to look up? Who were the great artists and the great writers of Archie? And that really helped me learn what I liked and which ones to seek out.
Now, do you know if that Riverdale podcast, is that still available like on iTunes or Stitch or any of the big ones?
It was recently, I know, because last year I have a tendency to binge, and I felt sad about not having new Riverdale episodes. So I went back and re-listened to the last 6 or 7 episodes all over again. So it was still out there, like I say, at least as of last fall.
You know, it's funny. When I was growing up, I didn't read Archie at all. And like I said, it's probably a result that when I got into comics, not that I was old, I was 9, but I was a little older and I was kind of dismissive of them. And over the years, as I got older, I would, and my taste broadened, I didn't necessarily become an Archie reader, but I would, and I mentioned this and when Chris and I first covered it in an episode, I would kind of support the idea of them still being in grocery stores by buying Digest. I would see them and say, oh, well, I love that they're still, because, you know, by the time I was in my 30s, you know, comics weren't really available anywhere outside of comic stores. You know, right. Graphic novels are, but not like pamphlet comics. But I would see them in grocery stores, and I'll get one. So I read a few here and there. But I wouldn't say I became an Archie fan. And then Chris and I covered it, and I kind of – and we enjoyed what we read. But I kind of asked the listeners, I said, you know, I'm kind of curious, you know, who is the Archie audience? You know, do you buy them now? Are you older? Are you younger? Do you buy them because you grew up? And keep in mind, people who listen to Golden Age podcasts tend to be older. You know, we don't have like 12-year-olds listening to it. We tend to have older people. So I was speaking to an older audience. And in all the episodes we've done, I got the most feedback from that question. I got a lot of people sending me messages on Facebook or Twitter saying, you know, oh, I've read Archie growing up. I loved it. And I really loved the messages. It was a lot of people saying how they got them, you know, and some of the older people were reading the pamphlets back in the 70s. Some of the youngers were getting digests from their parents as recently as the 2000s. And they were just big fans of Archie comics. And it wasn't like they're necessarily their favorite, but they just really found them charming and had an appreciation. So over the last 2 years, I have really kind of tried to kind of dive into the Archie world. And I've read some of the Golden Age Archies. I got a lot of the 75th anniversary digest collections, which covered, you know, various decades, you know, different characters. I'm not that familiar with the newer stuff, but I have gone back and read a lot of the older stuff and really enjoyed it. And I'll say I've become a fan now. I really like it.
Yeah. Some of the new stuff is pretty good. Mark Waid, I had written quite a bit of it, and my son and I would check those out from the library and read those. Those are some good good takes, a little bit different than typical classic, you know, ones that are still out there. Dan Parent did do more like a throwback version of Archie maybe about a year ago called Your Pal Archie. But in general, if you want the classic House style, those are the digest only these days. But yeah, those are still out there. You know, they're still at the bookstores. They're still in the grocery stores and in the department stores. So yeah, it's a great way to support comics on the newsstand or at the checkout line is grabbing one of those. And we do it periodically with the family. That's for sure.
Now, I have had every intention of checking out the newer material. It's just one of those things where if you get into a comic, you know, that's been around for 80 years, there's only kind of so much you can get into in the beginning.
Oh, sure.
It takes time. But I've heard great things over them over the last few years. And I did recently pick up the first issue of Archie 1941, which looked very good, and I enjoyed the first issue. I plan to go back and start collecting that. I do want to go back and start reading the Mark Waid series. I also am very excited, and this isn't necessarily just Archie, obviously, but they've had the Archie Batman 66 crossover.
Right.
And I've been a big fan of the Batman 66 comics, but I've always collected them in hardcovers. So I've been waiting just to be consistent for it to come out in hardcover so I can finally pick it up. But I did go ahead and get, when I was at Baltimore Comic Con a few months ago, a really nice print that Dan Parent drew of, or not Dan, who drew it? It actually was Dan Parent. It's
oh, okay. Him,
it's Batman, Robin, and Batgirl with the Archie gang, and it's awesome. And I can't wait to read that. I'm also thinking another reason I'm going to start picking it more is artist Sandy Jarrell. I don't know if you're familiar with him. He worked on Bombshells. He does some Archie work now. He worked on Batman 66. He's a super nice guy. And I wouldn't necessarily say I know him well, but I've gotten to talk to him at some conventions and online. And he recently has kind of gotten hired to do more work for Archie. So I'd kind of like to follow some of his work. So I have a lot of reasons to dive into some of the more recent work of Archie, and I'm looking forward to it.
Well, and not only that, you also have, if you want to go down the rabbit hole, you've got their Dark Circle superheroes that have kind of been reinvigorated, and their whole horror line, which just keeps growing and growing. Some of those are really good, too.
The horror is actually what I'm most looking forward to, because that's the stuff I've actually heard the best about. And not in a campy, well, somewhat campy, but in a really, like, this is really good stuff.
Right. Well, they did do some campy as well. The speaking of campy, Alex DeCampi did the Archie versus Predator, which was very fun. And it was the House style meeting Predator. And that was kind of a hoot. But the more serious horror is really great. The Hunger with Jughead and Afterlife with Archie. And the Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, all of those have been really good, high-quality comics.
Yeah, I the Hunger with Jughead in particular, I'd love to try. It's just one of those things where in my last year, I've spent a lot of time really diving into older stuff and older collections. And money-wise, I've had to kind of sacrifice, you know, buying kind of newer comics as much, even though I'm very much a fan of newer ones. But I definitely want to check out The Hunger first, because that's the one that for whatever reason interests me. But I definitely want to read Afterlife with Archie and the others as well. They all sound tons of fun. And credit to Archie. I am really impressed with how much variety and what they've been willing to do over the last few years. I never growing up would have thought Archie would be around now doing horror stories, having characters like Kevin around. They've really kind of managed to stay alive and strong, and I'm pretty impressed.
Yeah, they've done a good job making sure that they stayed relevant.
Okay, now getting back to what we're going to cover in this particular episode, we are going to be diving into the Best of Archie Comics, Betty and Veronica, Volume 1. This came out in 2014. This is one of their oversized digests. It's not like you'd see in the grocery store. The dimensions are a bit bigger, and it's about 400 pages of Archie goodness. It also covers stories from all eras of the comics, which is why we're choosing stories from it for tonight's episode. Joe will be discussing Glamour in White, which is a tale originally presented at Archie Comics 4, cover dated September-October 1943. I'll be discussing another story simply titled, of course, Betty and Veronica, which was originally published in Archie Comics 5, cover dated November-December 1943. Now, both of these stories were written and drawn by Harry Saul with inks by Janice Vallu. Now, in the 1940s, now I should mention his last name is spelled S-A-H-L-E. I'm pronouncing it Saul, but I can't say for certain I'm right. But that's what it sounds like to me. Now, in the 1940s, Harry Saul drew for a variety of publishers, including Quality Comics and Timely. And if you've listened to our show before, you know that I'm a huge fan of Quality Comics. I consider Quality Comics to be the best age company out there. I thought they were doing the highest quality work. Sadly, Harry died in 1950 at the very young age of 38. And oddly, Gil Kane reported at one point in Alter Ego magazine, Harry died of a broken heart. Apparently, Harry fell in love with an 18-year-old anchor named Vivian, and two were hired by Quality Comics, where publisher Peter Arnold, who we've talked about before in Plastic Man and other episodes, Busy Arnold fell in love with Vivian, and they got together, and this apparently hit Harry tremendously, and Gil Kane just claimed that he died of a broken heart. During that same interview, Roy Thomas speculated that Gil might be getting the name off and might actually be referring to anchor Violet Barkley, who was an anchor at the time that was referred to in Stan Lee's 1947 book Secrets of the Comics as the glamorous girl anchor Rusty, which I guess was a nickname. But, you know, this was speculation on Roy's part. These may be two separate people. I don't know. But anyways, the anchor on the story was Janice Falou. She was a Golden Age artist and anchor. She was MLJ, which, of course, became Archie. And also Charlton, Novelty, Quality Comics, some others. She had studied commercial art growing up at the Phoenix Art Institute and sadly left comics during the Wortham-driven scandal of the mid-1950s. She just decided at that point that she was no longer interested in pursuing an art career. I couldn't find a huge amount of information on her, but apparently she ended up having four children. She was married 61 years, very long time. Sadly, her husband passed away in 2009, but she survived to 90 years old and ended up passing away in December 2013. Again, not a lot of detail, but hopefully she led a happy life. And those are our two main creators that I could get credits on for this story.
Yeah, and it looked like she also went by the name Ginger if anybody decides to research her as well. So if you look her up, she might be credited as Ginger on some of the comics, as well as Janice. Because Mike was saying, she worked a lot on the Betty and Veronica stories, as well as other stuff in Archie.
Now, did she still use the same last name, or did she just go by, like, Ginger as a pseudonym?
From what I understood, she used the same last name, but kind of like with the Rusty earlier, I think she just used Ginger as, you know, maybe she didn't want to use her real name, because as we well know from a previous podcast that you and Chris have done, not everyone wanted to be associated with comics in that era.
You had mentioned before, and we were talking about this and trying to figure out the degree of credit each one as far as the art style, because he, when I looked on Grand Comics database, he was listed as the artist and her as the inker, or him as a penciler and her as the inker, but we weren't quite sure, you know, what that, you know, these credits are 80 years old, and we weren't quite sure what that translated to, because you had kind of suggested that perhaps she was a little more responsible for the art than just being an inker. Perhaps she was more of a finisher and he may have been more of a layout artist.
Right, because if you read the little synopsis she had on Women in Comics, it said that she worked on the Betty and Veronica stories as artist and inker in, you know, those issues of Archie that she worked on. So it's possible she may have done a little bit more of than just the inking, and maybe a little bit more of finishing on some layouts that he had given to her. I'm just not sure, and, you know, who knows at this point.
We are going to pause briefly for a commercial message for other podcast, and then we will come back and I will turn this over to Joe to cover our first story. So we will be back shortly.
Warlord Worlds,
a fan podcast devoted to the comics of writer and artist Mike Grell, including The Warlord, John Sable, Green Arrow, Star Slayer, and Shaman's Tears.
I'm Ruth.
And I'm Darren.
Please join us as we discuss the stories, characters, and art in the many excellent comics from writer and artist Mike Grell.
Special episodes feature interviews with Mike Grell himself.
And special segments feature great guests discussing the Legion of Superheroes.
Listen at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and YouTube.
Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, or visit warlordworlds.com.
Warlord Worlds is part of the Rad Adventures Network at radadventuresnetwork.com.
The This is an imaginary podcast, which may never have happened.
The Short Box Showcase.
But then again may have. About a father and daughter.
I'm Professor Allen.
And I'm Emily.
Who came from Ohio and talked about comics.
Identity Crisis.
Lone Wolf and Cub.
Hergé's Tintin.
White Tiger.
It tells of their rise to glory, when the great guests were yet to be booked.
I didn't know this was going to be the Jimmy Olsen Hate Podcast.
It's always the Jimmy Olsen Hate Podcast.
And the great feats of editing not yet performed.
Ultraman, this is Ultra 7, this is Ultraman Jack, and this is Ultraman Taro, and this is Ultraman Leo, and this is Ultraman...
Of how they spoke at length.
When I read a comic, story comes first and art comes second.
Continuity is really the brainchild of nitpicking nerds the world over.
Those are our people, Emily. And reviewed in brief tales that explore creatively the bounds of a given character's history.
Superman has basically the same relationship with Wonder Woman that he has with Batman.
Of brilliant creators before their fall from grace. This is the era where Miller is at the height of his creative and artistic talent, and the ability of strong writing to encapsulate and transcend its time.
Flash of Two Earths by Gardner Fox.
This is an imaginary podcast. Aren't they all? Shortbox Showcase is part of the Relatively Geeky family of podcasts. Check us out on the web at relativelygeekypodcast.blogspot.com or search in iTunes for Relatively Geeky or Shortbox Showcase. And remember, we're not experts.
We're just family.
And now, the Riverdale Carnival presents the Archies.
Okay, everybody, here we go with our new hit record, Sugar, Sugar!
Sugar. Oh, honey, honey, you are my candy girl, and you got me wanting you. Honey, oh, sugar, sugar, you are my candy girl, and you got me wanting you. I just can't believe the loveliness of loving you. I just can't believe it's true. I just can't believe the wonder of this feeling too. I just can't believe it's true. Ah, sugar. Ah, honey, honey.
Okay, so the story that I'm going to be covering tonight is Glamour and White, and as we mentioned before, that's from Archie number 4. So the story opens with Betty and Veronica, and they're sitting and talking on some steps. Betty, Archie is my boyfriend. Veronica, who was it he took to the prom? Betty, took me on a class boat ride, you upholstered siren. Well, Veronica blows Betty off by saying, well, I'm going to go become a volunteer nurse. Not to be outdone, Betty decides, well, guess what? Two can play at that game. I'm going to be a volunteer nurse as well. Later, we see Veronica. She's meeting her supervisor, Nurse Grady. Veronica says that she is so happy to be able to help the war effort. A little bit later, we see the same Nurse Grady taking Betty out to begin her job in the hospital. She's handed a mop. Betty complains, I didn't know nurses had to mop. How do you like that? I spent all day in the beauty parlor getting ready to meet handsome patients. And right as she finishes saying that, she runs smack dab into a man, drenching him and soaking his head in water. This gentleman, who coincidentally is named Dr. Cuball and has no hair, then admonishes the supervisor, Nurse Grady, and says, you better find something else for Betty to do. After following up with Betty, Nurse Grady opens the closet to get the mop. Well, Betty didn't put it away very well, so if you know Fibber McGee's closet, everything comes crashing down and the Nurse Grady ends up with a mop on her head. After that, Betty is sent off to the kitchen. Checking in with Veronica, we see her in front of a mountain of dishes. Good grief! I never washed a dish in my entire life! Right then, another nurse arrives to let Veronica know that she has an urgent call. Veronica exits, and we see a close-up shot, and it's a full sink full of dishes, full of water, but the faucet is running full blast. Well, it's Jughead on the phone. Not sure why, but it seems that Archie's in the hospital. Veronica decides she must find him at once. Next, Betty is also notified by the same nurse that Jughead is on the phone, and Betty runs off. We cut back to Veronica. She has stolen a patient's flowers, and she's going room to room frantically looking for Archie. When she finally finds him, she goes in and talks to him. We cut away to Betty. She's rushing down the hall with her own stolen loot, a box of candy. At least the patient was sleeping, so he didn't see Betty take the candy. Once Veronica hears someone at the door, she jumps under the bed, afraid that Betty is going to be Nurse Grady. Once the two see each other, they begin to fight. Veronica: "You pants-chasing hussy!" Betty: "You little cat!" I'm not sure what that means. That's one of those that may be lost in time to us. Veronica: "You better hope they don't ration peroxide or you're going to be in trouble." While they are arguing, we see two patients in a separate room underneath where the sink was running. They're being drenched, literally flooded with water coming down onto their beds. And this is where Veronica left the water running. Betty's patients are not much better off. At least they're not happy. They're not getting soaked, but they're very unhappy because they haven't eaten. She was left in charge of the kitchen and, you know, she didn't feed them, and now they're threatening to sue. Nurse Grady is summoned to the flooded sink, and a nurse tells Nurse Grady how Miss Cooper's patients are threatening to riot. So she's got patients rioting in one wing. She's got some patients being flooded in another. She has got to figure out what's going on. So Nurse Grady finds the two of them cozied up to Archie in the room. They've made friends, and one's on one side of Archie and one's on the other. Nurse Grady informs them that Archie's fine. He was only there because his tonsils had just been removed. Betty: "You deliberately had tonsils removed today just to make us look foolish." Veronica: "At least you could have had aggravated tonsils." Archie: But, Veronica: "Come on, Betty. All men are all alike." Betty: "You can't trust any of them. Goodbye, Archie Andrews." And arm in arm, the girls stomp out of the room, leaving a confused and sad Archie. And that's our Glamour in White.
Oh, I love that story, man.
Oh, it was a hoot. They definitely don't do them like that anymore.
Well, it's got a perfect ending. I love the girls storming off together arm in arm who've just had it with that Archie guy.
And, you know, and the funny thing is, did he really do anything wrong? All he did was have his tonsils removed, and they decided the story that was happening. I love that they accuse him of, couldn't he have at least had aggravated tonsils? Like, that would have made much difference on the severity of his illness.
One of the things I liked, and I really like old movies, and going back to the 30s and 40s, comedies, drama, what, but I felt like this story was very similar in the vibe and the representative, and the slapstick humor throughout some of their adventures was very similar to what you would see on screen in that era, that they really kind of captured that vibe with Betty and Veronica's kind of misadventures as nurses and accidentally causing all these accidents and such. And I really love that part of the story.
It reminds me of Katharine Hepburn and Cary Grant. She decides what is happening, even if that's not what has happened. And Cary is just, but, you know, and she's determined, like, okay, he's done this, this, and this wrong, and he's not done anything. And he's just the kind of put upon man. So yeah, it definitely has that fun vibe of those movies. Like, I'm thinking Arsenic and Old, no, not Arsenic and Old Lace, Bringing Up Baby.
Yeah,
Bringing Up Baby, yeah.
Perfect. Yeah. Now, I also really like the art style. You know, the way this, I don't want this to be a negative because I don't mind it. But Archie, the way he's drawn during the Golden Age is very different than how he is in subsequent eras.
Right.
And with the big teeth and the kind of goofy smile, which I don't mind. But I really like how Betty and Veronica are drawn, though. You know, I'm not that I could take it or leave it with Archie, but I really like the way they portray Betty and Veronica in the Golden Age stories. I think the art and the drawing, it's very much of that kind of Milton Caniff kind of 1930s newspaper strip kind of vibe. And I think
almost femme fatale. Yeah.
Yeah. It makes them look strong, sexy, but strong. And the way, you know, they draw their facial expressions, it's so expressive that they go from just rage to humor to back and forth so quickly. It's just really, they're really, Betty and Veronica are really well done in these stories. And the characters start out, they're very much man crazy. So, and I know it's a product of its time.
Right.
So there is always an element of sexism a little bit if you're going to read the stories. But despite that, they are not like delicate flowers either. They're tough in a lot of ways. And that comes out in the story.
One thing, and I don't have it in front of me, so I can't credit the person. All of these stories in these big, thick books that Archie has done, these best ofs, have an intro written either by someone who has worked with Archie, is working at Archie, or is a fan of Archie. The person, and I didn't want to steal this thought from them, but I totally agreed with it. I love the fact that you have the two of them look so glamorous one second, and the next second they're doing something like a mop to the face. So that's just wonderful how they're able to mix that glamour and that humor together in such a creative way. And it doesn't feel fake. It feels real.
Absolutely. And the humor is not dated. It's good humor. It stands up today. If I was a young kid reading it, I would find it as funny as I would in 1943. It works great.
Like I've said, my son, my 10-year-old loves them.
I can totally see that. It's funny because, like I said, I haven't gotten into the newer stuff, but I've been making it a point to read from all eras. I've read, they have the Americana series that goes from Golden Age, Silver Age, up to Bronze Age. I'm reading the Bronze Age now, and I've enjoyed them. But the one I've enjoyed the most is the Golden Age one.
Right.
And it has to do a lot. And clearly I'm biased. I'm co-hosting a Golden Age comics podcast. So I'm biased. But I really think that they have some of the most fun and the most character in some of these older stories. And I think you kind of mentioned before we got online, you were kind of talking about how the personalities of Betty and Veronica have evolved over the years.
Right.
And how different they are. And I thought there was some truth to that. So I was wondering if you could kind of, now that we're recording, kind of get back to that a little bit.
Sure. Well, you still have kind of like the debutante with the heart of gold for Veronica. So even though, you know, she does have some selfish things that she's doing in this story, she also ultimately is pitching in. She wants to help with the war effort. So she's working at a hospital. And in a previous story in this volume, you know, she's making sure that she goes to a dance with the soldiers. And the funny thing is, I don't know if she's changed as much as Betty has, because Betty in this story, she's worried about how she looks much more than I feel like you see her in future stories. She's much more worried about how she's being put across. She doesn't feel like the girl who rolls up her sleeves and gets inside of the jalopy trying to get Archie's car running. And she's a little bit closer, I think, to how Veronica is portrayed. But I don't know. I enjoy so much these stories because it is a little bit different than what we're used to. And I like what we're used to, but it's nice to see different takes on them as well.
Yeah, I think you captured it really well. This was a great story. I will tell people listening, you know, Joe threw out some stories and I chose these two among the ones he chose. But all the ones Joe threw out were great. He knew exactly, because he's been reading some of these Archie collections too, and I knew he had some of the ones I had, and what he didn't I would pick up, and I asked him to throw some out there, and all the ones he threw out were some of the best of the Archie ones. He has very good Archie taste.
Thank you.
So with that, are you ready to move on to the next one?
Let's go for it.
All right.
We've learned a new dance. Now let's dance into a brand new song.
I recall just walking down the street, trying to escape the city. I saw her from the corner of my eye. Yeah, she looked so good, I thought I'd die. My heart went bang, shang, bang. Bang, shang, bang. Bang, shang, bang. Bang, bang. My heart went bang, shang, bang. Bang, shang, bang. Bang, shang, bang. Bang, bang.
My story again is called, like I said, just Betty and Veronica. It was from Archie Comics number 5, from cover date November, December 1943. This story opens with Betty about to join Veronica in spending the summer at the Lodge estate, but Veronica's dad insists that Archie not be invited because he is expecting a business associate as well, and he wants everything to go right. And if you read Archie comics, you know that whenever Archie is around Veronica's dad, things do not go right at all. Archie is not happy with being left out, but he still wishes that they have a nice time and says goodbye to them as they leave. As their cab pulls away, an older man with a briefcase comes running up in a panic, worried that he has barely enough time to make it to the airport for his flight. He jumps in the car, not expecting to find two teenage girls already inside. He accidentally gets a little too close to them as he jumps in, and the girls both give him a good smack, shouting, "How dare you?" He insists he did not know the cab was occupied, but the cab driver looks at him in judgment and mutters, "Tisk tisk, I guess they're never too old." The implications there. The girls throw him out of the cab and go on to the airport. Veronica panics after her cat Leona is discovered to be missing. As she looks for her, she collides with that same strange older man from the cab earlier. He drops his suitcase, opening it, and we see Leona crawl into one of his socks. Not noticing the cat, he grabs all of his stuff and rushes for the plane. Veronica is heartbroken over Leona, but Betty assures her that they will call Archie once they land and have him look for her. The old man has taken a seat in front of them, but everyone is too distracted to notice each other's presence. As the stewardess approaches, Leona sneaks out of the still-open suitcase and brushes up against the girl's legs. They immediately suspect that the man in front of them was trying to get fresh and notice it's the... Well, they were.
Right.
And notice it's the same creepy guy from the cab. Veronica asks the stewardess to put this, quote, "put this sex maniac off at once," unquote. As they all take turns hitting the old man, the stewardess shouts, quote, "at his age, too," unquote, and Betty follows, quote, "the older his type gets, the more dangerous they are," unquote. After their little Me Too moment has wound down, everyone goes back to their separate bunks. Once in bed... Still getting past that. Once in bed, Veronica mentions that she hopes the plane is safe, and Betty describes a plane crash she heard about where 5 people were killed. Veronica says, "That's nothing. What about one that crashed into a mountainside and everyone died?" Their discussion starts to freak out the old man, who is close enough to hear them, and he gets extremely nervous. Just then, Leona gives a loud purr, and the old man thinks the sound is the engines giving out. He grabs a parachute and rushes for the exit, but becomes entangled and ends up hanging from the plane door. Suspended from the plane, which is apparently not very high up, he bumps into some unfriendly cactus and passes a fence into a farm where an unfriendly goat decides to attack. This causes the two to get into a tussle that frees him the parachute, but leaves him sitting in his pajamas in the middle of a field. Later at the Lodge estate, Betty and Veronica are with her father, awaiting the arrival of his business associate. And of course, that associate, poor Mr. Smudge, turns out to be the same old man that we have seen throughout this story. They react to his condition, which is not good, and he says, "It was all because of these two homicidal female maniacs, Lodge. If only I had them right here, now I'd be..." And the girls react, "That voice, Veronica, the man on the plane." And it closes with a little note that Veronica and Betty wrote to Archie that says, "Dear Archie, Father's business deal is off, so I guess it's all right for you and Jughead to come out after all. Mr. Smudge, Father's business associate, took a dislike to us for some petty reason and stormed out of the house as soon as he was able to recuperate from a slight illness. Men are so unreasonable. Love, Betty and Veronica." I got to do the story with the sex maniac.
That story alone is worth purchasing that volume.
It is funny how comfortable they were. You know, we always kind of think, I used to watch reruns of Father's Knows Best in the 50s, and everything was so pure and innocent. And then you go back and read this, and 1943, Veronica was complaining about this old man sex maniac, and everyone was joking about, well, it's his age, they get the worst. They're always hitting young teenage girls. What the hell?
I know when you asked for stories, that was the first one that jumped out at me, because I literally had started reading that volume when you first approached me about stories to do from the Golden Age. And I'm like, boy, I've got a doozy. And that is such a classic one.
It's, you know, jokes aside, it's actually a really well done story. the way it lays out with the poor, that poor old bastard. Everything just goes wrong. And no matter what he does, he just ends up looking like this old perv.
Right. I love the bit with it. They think he's getting fresh with him, and then they scare him witless later on about the plane crashes. That was classic.
Oh, yeah. When the two of them and that stewardess who was coming by all think he was getting fresh, and they all start beating him and slapping him.
So funny. Oh, goodness.
It was a very good one. It was You would probably literally pick the best two stories out of this whole volume.
Yeah, the two of those just really jumped. There was a couple that I think were top contenders, but they couldn't touch that one.
Yeah, and I actually, because it didn't have the kind of weird Archie look, I also thought the art in this was just perfect. It was just really well done. The way the old man was drawn, the way Veronica's father was drawn, it was just perfectly done the whole time. The slapstick was captured perfectly. It was just great.
Yep.
What's your thoughts on art in this era, in the comic Archie era of the kind of the early 40s?
It took some getting used to because, you know, we always talk about the house style when we talk about Archie. Basically, the Dan DiCarlo is how a lot of us grew up reading it, or like the 50s reprints, the Harry Lucy, that sort of thing. So it looks a little rough, but once you get used to it, and especially after you've read some other Golden Age comics, I quite appreciate it. And the girls are just drawn beautifully.
Yeah, I really think the girls are actually one of the best strengths of the era. And Jughead tends to be drawn pretty well, too. But I think that the girls are actually kind of the ones that come out the best during this era from the way the artists portray them. And it's that element of good girl art.
Definitely.
Which was very prominent in this era. And I don't mean that in a negative at all, because it was all done, you know, I was about to say it was all done tastefully, having just read the Sex Maniac story. But you know what I mean. It wasn't salacious or crude. It was these were just very pretty girls, and they were drawn as very pretty girls.
Well, yeah, and I mean, they still were shooting for teenagers to read these books. So they don't want to be too salacious with any of it. But yeah, they definitely have that good girl look to them. And I just really appreciate what a great job they did in that era, getting that across, that these are teenage girls, but they're, you know, beautiful teenage girls without it feeling like, you know, you are that dirty old man on the plane.
And that was another thing, that there was an element of strength to them, because three or four times throughout the story, they beat the hell out of this old man they thought was being creepy. And God bless him for it. You know, they should. If they were right, he deserved it, and they should do that.
Exactly.
So good for them, despite the poor guy not having any idea what was going on.
Oh yeah, he had a rough night. Yeah.
So Joe, these were two great stories you picked, and I want to thank you for doing it. And any final thoughts on Archie, Golden Age, anytime, anywhere, these stories, whatever?
Not offhand. I would just say that if you are looking to read more, definitely check out, like Mike mentioned, the Americana series. There's a Golden Age one, which is great. And I quite like the Silver Age one as well. And check out the Best Of series. They're kind of digest size, but much chunkier, kind of like almost like if you took two essentials almost and slapped them together. Some of them get pretty big, but they've got a lot of great stories, and it's a good way to look at the different eras and see how the art styles and stories have changed, and also get good quality from all the different eras.
Yeah, just to echo Joe's thought, I'm holding the Archie Americana Bronze Age, and it's about the same size as the one he just described, and it's only $9.99. That's a really good price as far as the content you get. And most of these bigger volumes, and again, they're not the size of what you would see in the grocery store of an Archie Digest. Like he said, they're bigger. They're kind of more showcase size. The dimensions are a little smaller, but the thickness is on par. And they do tend to all be about $9.99, which is a good deal considering you get like 400 pages or so in a lot of these issues. And if your preference is Golden Age, Silver Age, I agree with Joe. I thought the Silver Age was a really entertaining volume too. I just started the Bronze Age, so I don't really have an opinion on it yet because I'm only like two stories in, but I have every expectation it's probably going to be just as fun. But I really love both the Golden Age. I really love the Silver Age. And like he said, I think the Best Of were good. I also, after that episode that Chris and I recorded 2 years ago, picked up a lot of their 75th anniversary volumes, and I really love those as well. And Archie actually has an app, if you have a tablet or something you like to read comics on, where a lot of their first issues of different volumes or series you can get for free. So if you have those apps, go check them out. And you could download a lot of comics on there for free as samples of their other material. And a lot of the stuff we've described, you can get samples from the different eras or the different volumes and just read one or two stories and see what you think. And if you want to go ahead and buy the whole volume.
Yeah, and like you said, the most expensive one I think of those like kind of chunky ones I've bought was $15. They don't go over that price. So value-wise, they're tough to beat.
Now, if you do decide you really like the Golden Age, they do have archives, which I bought the first two of and plan to get more. And they are more traditional trade size like you would see with Marvel or DC, and they're thicker. The ones I got were soft cover, but I think I did read that there were hardcovers out there. They're a little pricier, but it's because they follow that more traditional kind of format like DC and Marvel do. But there is some great stuff in there, too. I was really happy with especially the first volume I bought, where I got to see his introduction and some of the follow-up stories. So those are out there, too, to check out. So I'd recommend them.
Were those like the Dark Horse ones that they were doing? Yep. Okay. Yeah, those are nice books.
Yeah, I only have two of them now, but I do want to go back and pick up. So I don't know how far they got. I haven't kind of looked into that.
Right.
I don't know if there are very many out there, but I do want to try to get whatever they have.
Yeah, those Dark Horse books, they're tough to beat. They're well made and good quality stuff.
Yeah, both Dark Horse and IDW have done an amazing job of going back and archiving some of the older comic and comic strip material out there.
Right.
So I'm really thankful to both of those companies for doing that.
Yeah, IDW I know has done several of like your 50s and 60s artists, like the Harry Lucy, where they've done artist spotlights of Archie. They haven't done where it's like the complete collections like Dark Horse was, starting at the beginning and working through. But there's some nice collections out there if you want to look at some of the really nice 50s and 60s artwork that was done.
Well, Joe, I want to thank you again for coming on. I really appreciate it. You're one of our favorite guys. And again, if you are on Twitter, he is G-A-A, not G-I, G-A Joe 74. And he's got a great comic-related Twitter account. As far as Chris and I, we do plan to go back in the next month or so and do another episode. If you're a follower and you're interested in the show, we have a Facebook page, Comics in the Golden Age, and we are on Twitter in Comics in the GA, and we would welcome a follow. We tend to be a little more active on Twitter than Facebook, so if you're out there in the Twitterverse, I would highly recommend you give the account a follow. We'd really appreciate it. And as always, we would welcome a review on iTunes, which is always probably the thing you could do to most support the podcast, so that would be the thing we'd most appreciate, and thank you very much if you decide to do that. Joe, I want to thank you again and wish you the best. It has been wonderful having you on the show.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. I really enjoyed getting to talk to you today.
And I hope in the future you would be willing to come back, whether it's doing a mini episode on your own or talking to me or Chris about some other comic.
Most definitely.
Love to have you.
Thanks.
All right. With that, I am going to end the show. Thank you again and good night.
It's right.